Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Got him. Painter strikes out the side and closes the door to finish the end of a five-game losing streak. Astros win for the first time on this homestand. They get to shake hands here at home for just the second time in the last 11 home games, as they had lost 10 out of 11, actually second time in the last 12 home games, as they win tonight.
Oh, man, I hadn't realized it'd been that big of a nightmare at home. The Astros had been so good at home this year up until the month of July. Wow, 10 out of their last 12. That's good. They got to shake hands. It's like they're not even familiar with each other. Like, hey, I remember you. Let's shake hands. The Astros win last night. The nightmare is over, and the five-game losing streak is over, and they beat the Washington Nationals last night. 7-4, Todd Kallas on the call, Space City Home Network, as we come to you live from Texans training camp. It is day 7 of Texans training camp. Sean Pendergast, we are efforting to connect Seth Payne. Technical issues, we'll get that worked out. But in the meantime, you've got me live from Texans training camp. It's still dark outside here, sun coming up in just a little bit. Man, we got a lot to get to. The Astros losing streak is over. We've got a trade deadline coming up tomorrow. So we'll turn our attention to baseball at some point later here in the 6 o'clock hour. But let's get started with Texans training camp. It was day 6 yesterday. We got a lot of stuff to get to, man. We had Nick Caserio on the show yesterday. We'll be sprinkling in some of that throughout the program today. Some good players coming to the podium yesterday. We had our second padded practice yesterday, and we got a third one coming up today. From what I've heard, it's going to be a padded practice out here today. So a lot to get to on the show. I watched every snap of training camp yesterday, so I've got my observations, and we'll come right out of the chute with that. Today is day 7, so we've got the rest of this week, day off tomorrow, practice Friday. I would imagine a very light practice on Saturday. And then the team jumps on a bird to head to West Virginia. We'll be coming to you from West Virginia live next week as well. So we're looking forward to that. Looking forward to 70-degree temps out of practice. All right, so let's get things started yesterday with what we saw out here at the Methodist Training Center. At 6:20 today, I want to play some audio from the drive. Clint Sterner came up to me yesterday and whispered in my ear when we were underneath the tents that I'm looking at right over there where the media stands, and he says, "Chief, something's wrong with 7. And I'm like, "Oh, I don't know. He looks like he's throwing. When he throws, he looks like he's throwing it pretty good." He's like, "No, man, something's wrong with 7. We will have audio from Clint Sterner from the drive at 6:20 today on why he thinks there may be something wrong with C.J. Stroud. And I'll give you my take on it from having watched C.J. Stroud. But we'll do that at 6:20. That was not in my observations. That was a Clint Sterner observation. So this first segment, my observations. Let's start with number one. I've got 5 of them. Number one. The offense had several really good moments yesterday. Probably a split decision, but I'll give it to the offense. I'm always inclined to give it to the defense just because this defense is so good. But the offense had some really good moments. Not early. 7-on-7 wasn't so hot. C.J. Stroud, in one of his only reps in 7-on-7, threw a pick to Kalen Bullock. Thumbs up to Kalen Bullock for securing the football. That was good. But the offense had some really good moments yesterday in the two extended 11-on-11 periods. They played a couple of real long team periods yesterday. They consistently did some good things both in the run game and in the pass game. And when I say in the pass game, I'm talking from, you know, C.J. to Davis. Davis Mills, who's had an excellent, excellent training camp. And even the backups, Graham Mertz and not so much Keaton Slovis, but Graham Mertz. Graham Mertz feels like he has like one throw every practice. You're like, "Oh, okay. I guess he's worth a 6th-round pick." Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday after the practice on how the offense has looked since putting the pads on.
"Hey, you see it, you know, things evening out more when you put the pads on. You know, defense kind of had the advantage there early on. We weren't in pads. Defense was making a lot of plays. And now just see things balancing themselves out. Offense is making plays daily. Our quarterbacks are doing a really nice job just placing the football in the right spot. And our receivers are making some really tough, contested catches. And that's what we want to be. We want to be a tough, physical football team. And you can't lose sight of that play on the outside from the receivers the DBs, how those guys play. That's the makings of a really physical team. So Jaden Higgins, he stepped up, made some really nice catches. Noel Hutchinson has done a really good job this year playing physical, really doing a great job at the catch point as well. We got a lot of guys on the offensive side who are getting, you know, really better, and it really jumps out in that receiver room to me.
Yeah, that he went deep on the receivers there. That matches what I was seeing out here yesterday. It was, if you're D'Amico Ryans, yesterday was almost kind of the perfect practice because the offense had enough good moments where you felt good about them, and the defense, in particular the guys you're going to rely on this year, were doing some things. You know, Danielle Hunter was still wreaking havoc. Will Anderson still looks amazing out here. You're getting some contributions in the team periods from guys like Jalen Smith, who they drafted in the third round, who, look, we know from the cornerback position, after Stingley and Lassiter, if one of those guys goes out, it kind of falls off a cliff until we see what Damon Arnette looks like in a real game, you know, with this sort of life renaissance that he's had. So I say all this to say, it was if you're just a Texans fan, I don't come out of that practice yesterday particularly overly concerned about either side of the football. It was a pretty balanced practice, as D'Amico said. Number two, offensive line. They did the same thing yesterday as they did on Monday, where they kept the units the same throughout both team drills. Largely the same through both team drills. The only spot they were flipping between the ones and the twos yesterday was the center spot. Jake Andrews was the center with the ones yesterday, whereas Jarrett Patterson was with the ones on Monday. And so they flip-flopped those two guys. Other than that, it's the same, which was from left to right, the ones, Cam Robinson, Lakin Tomlinson, Jake Andrews, Titus Howard, and Ariante Irsery consistently is getting reps with the ones at right tackle. That's two practices in a row where he's gotten reps with the ones. The twos, for what it's worth, left to right, Zach Thomas, Jalen Thomas, yesterday Jarrett Patterson, and then the right side of the line is Ed Ingram and Blake Fisher. Blake Fisher's had a rough camp. We'll talk about some of the mistakes in a bullet point here shortly. But here was Nick Caserio yesterday. He actually laid out a time frame for when they're looking to kind of settle on their who their first string is going to be throughout the rest of training camp and hopefully in week one.
Yeah, at some point that'll probably declare itself a little bit more. Probably once we get through another week here and then maybe right before Minnesota or after Minnesota, somewhere in there. At some point, if we think this is what the group is going to be, then, all right, we're going to go ahead and let those guys work together as much as possible. The reality is we probably have 7 or 8 players that are going to factor in to the actual game day roster. Mm-hmm. So you just want to make sure that whoever those players are going to be, they get enough reps. But we've talked about this. We feel like we have a lot of depth and a lot of competition at multiple spots. Some of it's starting to clear itself a little bit. You know, we have, honestly, 4 or 5 starting tackles or starting level tackles. Blake Fisher, I know Trent's not practicing yet. Even if you were to take Titus out from guard and put him outside. So feel like we have decent depth there. And then inside, we have a number of players, some guys that are center only, some guys that are guard only, some multi-position players inside. So I think these next 2 to 3 weeks, we'll see a little bit more and we'll have a better idea and better understanding. So really, at some point, all these guys are probably end up playing with one another. Yeah. Eventually, you want to get to the point where whoever the 5 are, from a communication standpoint, you want to be able to go out there and practice as much as possible in anticipation of being ready to go for the Rams.
All right, I think a couple observations there. Number one is that Juice Scruggs is nowhere to be found on the 2-deep right now out of practice. So Juice Scruggs, who was a second-round pick 2 years ago, might be on the outside looking in. It didn't even dawn on me Trent Brown hasn't practiced yet. So that's another veteran guy at the tackle position. When they're bringing 7 or 8 on game day, there's going to be some guys who you would have thought figured prominently into the future of this team who either aren't going to be on this roster or might be inactive on game day. Based on what we've seen, granted, just through a week of training camp, there's still a lot more training camp to go. There's preseason games where a lot's going to be determined. But it sounds like there's going to be a lot determined and maybe nailed down before the first preseason game. I was a little surprised at that answer from Nick Caserio that it was going to be that soon. And I'm no offensive line expert, but my thought would be they take a couple actual preseason games against, you know, live bullets. Now, they're going to have a joint practice with the Panthers, joint practice with the Lions as well. There'll be plenty of opportunities, and nobody's going to be a sacred cow in all this. They may determine these are our ones going into Minnesota, but if Ariante Irsery struggles and has a bad game or a bad week of practice, then you're not going to leave him out there. So that's number two. And by the way, I think the offensive line looks better this time this year than it did this time last year when they had everybody in ink. in the ones. So it looks better. Quick observations here because we're up against it. Lots of quick game yesterday. The quick game is going to be a big part of this offense. Obviously, they want to run the football, but getting the ball out quick, CJ taking the easy money, taking a profit. They did a lot of that in the install period where they're just kind of walking through things. Ton of quick game in the 11-on-11. Everybody getting involved, wide receivers, tight ends, running backs. The running backs look good catching the ball out of the backfield. So there was that. Lots of quick game yesterday. That's number three. Number four, there were mistakes. Good day for the offense overall, but I mentioned CJ threw another interception. He's thrown a few picks in this camp. Something worth keeping an eye on. He's thrown a few picks. Now, this could be like a spring training situation in baseball where, you know, pitchers out there in spring training are throwing pitches they wouldn't normally throw because they're working on things and teams are taking him yard. CJ, they're like the pick that he threw to Kalen Bull, or there was a pick he threw or a near pick he threw on Monday. That might have been the one that, yeah, that was the one that hit Kalen in the chest and wasn't a pick. CJ probably throws that ball into the stands in a regular season game. He's just working on some things. I'm not overly concerned about that. But there were penalties, pre-snap penalties, at least three false starts that I counted. Blake Fisher got yanked after one of them. The coaches were pissed. So there were mistakes. It wasn't totally clean on the part of the offense yesterday. And number five, I'll give credit where credit's due. I kind of do when I do my five things. By the way, follow me on social media at Sean T. Pendergast or on Instagram at Sean.Pendergast. And I'm posting a video every day summarizing practice like I'm doing right now. I do like to give out a play of the day. For me, it was a tie yesterday. They were both Davis Mills throws. Davis Mills had a throw to John Metchie, I don't know, 15, 20 yards downfield to Mills' left that Metchie had to go to the ground. Made a really nice catch. Metchie had a good practice yesterday. He needs it. It's going to be tough making the team at wide receiver. And then Davis Mills had another one to Jaden Higgins, probably 20, 25-yard throw along the same sideline. But unlike Metchie, who had to go to the ground and stay in bounds to get it, Higgins had to kind of toe tap, and it was contested. He had to go to the ground, made a nice catch. They've hit on something with these rookie wide receivers the Texans have. All right, so there you go. There's your training camp summary through the eyes of Sean T. Pendergast. Hopefully you guys trust me on these, all right? It's all about trust. All right, we're efforting Seth. As soon as we get Seth connected and hooked up, it'll be Payne and Pendergast, not just Pendergast. Up next, I mentioned it, Clint Sterner has a theory or a fear over the workload of C.J. Stroud out here at Texans training camp. We'll let you hear what Clint Sterner from The Drive had to say. We've got some highlights from our conversation with Nick Caserio coming up as well. The Texans GM met with us yesterday. You can get that whole interview on the Odyssey app in the Payne and Pendergast podcast section. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We are close to getting Seth on here, I do believe. So once we do, we'll make that happen. All right, let's do this. I'll go ahead and play the audio from Clint. I really wanted to get Seth's take on this. I guess there's no crime in playing it again because it's only about a minute long. But Clint Sterner comes up to me yesterday at practice, and I preface everything by saying Clint is the former NFL quarterback, so his opinion matters on stuff like this. He's the only one of us out here standing underneath those white tents who's actually been through an NFL training camp as a quarterback that I can think of. Spencer Tillman was out there yesterday, but he was a running back. So Clint has dealt with the rep load thing at an NFL training camp before. And he comes up to me and he says, "Hey, Chief, I think something's up with Seven." And I said, "What do you think's up with Seven? Because every time he throws a football, it looks pretty good coming off his hands." And he thought, well, I'll let Clint explain, because he pretty much said on The Drive yesterday what he said to me at practice yesterday. Here was Clint. He's got a concern over exactly what C.J. Stroud's workload at practice looks like right now.
I'm not out here trying to tell you what's wrong. I'm not here trying to tell you that there's some kind of crazy injury. I'm telling you right now, watching five of the six practices that have taken place, something ain't right with C.J. Stroud.
You just by you. You're not saying that you know anything. You have inside information. But for you, what you're seeing numbers-wise in terms of reps and all of that the last, well, since camp started, is just unusual, and you and tips you to think like something's up because this isn't normal.
I'm not positive, Ron, because I didn't sit there and count every single rep, but they did two team periods and one 7-on-7 period And I know in one of the teams he got two reps, and I know in the 7-on-7 he got two reps. Point is, I'm not going to pin myself down to a precise number there because I was trying to watch other things. But there is today 7-on-7 and team combined. I bet you C.J. Stroud got a single digit rep. I bet it was 9 or fewer.
And to me, the hope is that they're just still, they're maybe potentially just still cautiously protecting his arm and well, in that, a way they did during mandatory minicamp.
But that in itself, that in itself is something.
Okay, so that's so. And boy, did Clint kick a bee's nest yesterday with this. I'm getting messages on platforms that I don't get messages on from people. By and large, nobody Facebook messages me. That if your only avenue to get in touch with me is via Facebook Messenger, we're probably not that super tight. And I'm getting messages from people on there. Sean, I got to know. I'm hearing Clint. I mean, I must have gotten 8 to 10 messages yesterday while Clint is giving this out on the air, while he's dishing on the air about this. And look, I again, Clint's been through training camps before. He knows what normal looks like. I have not tracked what the reps early in camp are with the ones. It's never dawned on me to sit down and see what the percentage is of how many reps the starter is getting. Maybe because it's probably normal for the starter to get more reps than the other guys. I will say that in certain drills, that has stood out to me that they're done with CJ after like 2 snaps, and then Davis Mills gets like 6 snaps. There's an easy way, I guess, to get more clarity on this, and it's to ask D'Amico Ryans or Nick Haley about it. Both of them are going to meet with the media at some point here in the next 24 to 48 hours. At least one of them, D'Amico, will meet with the media sometime in the next 6 hours. So it's probably a fair question about the reps. Ask the coach. I don't know that we're going to get a great answer. We didn't get a great answer from D'Amico when CJ was sitting out of OTAs, and the lack of clarity on that, I thought, caused a lot of the uproar. You know, as it turns out, minicamp rolls around, and he's zipping the ball down the field. So I think it's an interesting hypothesis by Clint. He obviously has years of experience in the NFL to back that up. My worry level is not that high because I think if it was something super urgent or very dangerous, that C.J. Stroud wouldn't be out here throwing a football. And he's looked good when he's thrown it. I can't recall a rep where he's really cut it loose, and I know Clint made that point several times yesterday that, boy, have we really seen him throw, really, really unleash one? And I can't recall one here off the top of my head in the padded practices. Now, in minicamp he did. I can remember a deep shot he took to Jaden Higgins. Jaden Higgins made a great one-handed catch about 40, 45, 50 yards downfield. My concern level, my DEFCON level on this, DEFCON 1 being the most worried. A lot of people get that wrong. DEFCON 1 is the height of concern. I'm like a DEFCON probably 5 or 4 on this right now. We'll wait and see how it plays out. We'll see. We'll ask D'Amico today about that, about the reps, and see where it goes from there. But, boy, Clint had people talking yesterday, man. He had people talking. All right, let's go to Nick Caserio. We had Nick Caserio on the show yesterday, Texans executive vice president and general manager. I thought this was one of the better conversations we've had with him in terms of insight, where this team is in certain spots. We played the audio in the open about Nick kind of laying out the timeline for the offensive line and when they expect that to kind of come together organically. It's kind of interesting, like it's come together we expect it to come together organically on this date. He didn't say that. I'm just kind of joking around about that. But he said, you know, sometimes either shortly before or shortly after the Minnesota game. If I had to guess, I would guess after. If it was me, I would want to see this group of ones in a game against, you know, live bullets in a preseason game. You know, granted, it'll be like 2 series, maybe. But I'd want to see that before I make any determinations on the depth chart. This was interesting. You know, Seth read Bill Belichick's book, read it in written word form, and listened to it in audio form, which I feel like you deserve some sort of Purple Heart or Badge of Courage or whatever for listening to an audiobook read by Bill Belichick. That feels like something if you lost your fantasy league, you'd have to go do. Listen to Bill Belichick drone for 8 hours about winning. Seth really liked the book, and one of Seth's big takeaways was, man, D'Amico Ryans and Bill Belichick are way more similar than you think, So we asked somebody who's worked with both of them, Nick Caserio for 2 decades with Bill Belichick, and obviously Nick Caserio for 2.5 years with D'Amico Ryans. Does he agree?
No, that's accurate. And you guys have had a perspective, D'Amico as a player, now as a coach. He's a no-nonsense, no BS guy. He's old school. Like that's what he believes in. That's how he was trained. He's the greatest person like in the history of the world. I mean, I've been on this show, talked about how much I love him, how great of a person that he is. His priorities are right, how important faith and family is. But when it comes to football, like he has that trigger, he has that switch, and he doesn't really have a lot of time. But the reality is none of us have time for a bunch of things that aren't really impacting winning. So the quicker we can arrive at that point, the quicker everybody has an understanding of that. Winning is hard in this league, so what you're trying to do is minimize the things that aren't going to help you win and focus on the things that are that actually matter, which is work, which is intent, which is showing up on a day-to-day basis, which is being consistent and just keeping your mouth shut and working. And that's how D'Amico was as a player, and he's not really operating that differently as a head coach than he did as a player. So he has that trigger. He has that switch. He's very invested in the process, and I think the players understand that, and, you know, it's exciting to be a part of that.
Different personality types, but you agree with Seth's assessment that the two are similar in key ways.
Seth's right about a lot of stuff, so in this particular case, I would agree.
Yeah. That's right, Sean. Did you hear that?
I forgot about that at the end. That wasn't my implication that Seth isn't right about things, Nick. I just look at it from the perspective, you know, Nick kind of took it to where what D'Amico was like as a player. And obviously Nick was not here when D'Amico was a player, but he scouted D'Amico, was part of the Patriots plenty of times going against D'Amico, both as a Texan and I would imagine as a Philadelphia Eagle once or twice as well. And that's how I look at it is Bill Belichick probably would have loved to have had D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans probably would have made I know there's going to be a lot of you that are going to drive off the road when I say this. Because you hate when I bring up the P word, Patriots. But D'Amico Ryans probably would have made a damn good New England Patriot back in the day. Bill Belichick would have loved having him. Would have loved having him play for him. Yeah, I think it's just interesting. The guy, you know, guys can have sort of the same set of credos, sort of the same codes, and they can have completely different personalities. And I think D'Amico and Belichick are probably extremely similar behind the scenes and how they handle accountability and things like that. They're probably more similar personality wise. The difference is that D'Amico is probably just friendlier than Belichick. Just he's an overall friendlier human being, at least outwardly in football environments. All right, let's keep it moving with Nick Caserio. Speaking of which, dovetail off of that, Caserio talked about leadership styles and the accountability with mistakes. They've done a very good job, I think, of finding guys that adhere to, not even the swarm mentality thing, not even the thing where guys just love hitting other human beings, but just accountability, guys that love football, and Nick Caserio talked about that.
No, I think that's the essence of leadership. All of us have to make a number of decisions on a day-to-day basis in our roles. Not every one of them is going to be right, and it's okay to admit, you know what, I was wrong about that, or you know what, I made a mistake, it's not good enough, and then just really work to get it fixed. So I think when you take accountability, individual accountability, hopefully people see that and respect that, and as long as it's done in a genuine fashion. Mm-hmm. So if you're wrong, don't be afraid to speak up and say, you know what, I'm wrong, I made a bad decision, or you know what, I don't know, let me go find out the information. There's a selfless nature to that, and it's okay to show, you know what, you're human and we all make mistakes, and that's part of life and that's part of growing up. So I think that's definitely a leadership trait or attribute that's important for people to possess. I mean, sometimes people act like they have all the answers and they want you to know about that. You know, at some point you're gonna drown those people out and not want to listen to them. So, but it's an interesting observation. I'd say there's certainly a lot of validity to that, just, you know, from my perspective.
All right, so Nick Caserio talking about leadership and D'Amico Ryans' accountability with mistakes. Let's keep it moving with Caserio here. I want to get to some of the specific player stuff. Titus Howard. Titus Howard, a holdover from the offensive line last year. When they were dumping guys last year, they trade Kenyon Green, they trade Laremy Tunsil, they cut Shaq Mason, and it felt like when you drive by one of those lots, you know, in West U where there's an old house, and they just tear everything down, and they're trying to build back up a much nicer new house. You don't normally tear down the house but leave the kitchen sitting there. You just tear the whole thing down and say, we're starting over. That's what it felt like they were doing on the offensive line when they were moving everybody. It wouldn't have shocked me if Titus Howard were gone, if they're just like, you know what, we're just starting this thing over again. They were that bad last year. And the scary thing is they were more talented than their productivity level or lack thereof, would have dictated. But they kept Titus Howard, and Titus really does seem to be embracing a leadership role on this team. I think it's great for Titus to not have Laremy Tunsil in the building anymore, doing the little brother thing, the little bro thing with Laremy Tunsil. That was not working for Titus Howard. The only thing it did was get him a contract. That's what Laramie's best at, pass protection and getting contracts. So Titus did get a contract. But I think Titus is embracing this new role. He's playing right guard now. We've not heard a peep about him not playing right tackle. That was a thing a couple years ago when he put right tackle for the Texans in his Twitter bio. Here was Nick Caserio yesterday on Titus Howard at this training camp compared to prior training camps.
Titus has been here for a number of years now, and honestly, he's probably seen as much change as anybody that's on the team. And, you know, to his credit, I mean, he's done a number of things that are very selfless. Like, we've asked him to change positions. He's played multiple spots. He really hasn't complained and bitched and moaned about it, so it kind of speaks to him. Titus is a good kid. He works hard. He's got a good attitude. There's been some ups and downs throughout the course of his career, but he continues to work and he get better. So, you know, we're glad he's here, and, you know, he's played good football for us. And even going back to, you know, my first season in 21 when he had to go out there and play left tackle, you know, he showed the ability to do that. So, you know, Titus deserves a lot of credit. Hadn't been easy, but I think he's really made a conscious effort to sort of work through it and try to do the right things. And the big thing with any player, and Titus included, is continue to work, continue to make progress, continue to improve, and do what you can to help the football team. And, you know, he's certainly embraced that.
All right. I like that they've got Titus Howard at right guard instead of left guard this year. You know, guys talk all the time about having to switch hands, you know, having to be ambidextrous. You know, it's different playing on the left side of the line than it is the right side of the line. Him making all those moves from right tackle to left guard, he wasn't great as a left guard. In fact, at times he was really bad. At times he was all right. I think he might be made more for guard than tackle, just physique-wise. But he's playing right guard when he's been steeped in playing right tackle through the years. I think just that very basic thing, he's going to be more comfortable there. And Titus really seems to be embracing that leadership role with this offensive line. The offensive line right now, and it's hard to look worse than they did early in camp last year. I mean, it was bad. I remember last year in camp, CJ, that was the only time I can remember CJ, like, really lashing out, was early in camp last year when they had that in ink number one unit. Now, here, they seem to have settled early on a group, at least four of the five spots. But early on, the offensive line, they don't look great. And, you know, there's certainly been practices where the defense made them look bad, but it's better than last year so far, in my opinion. Not a high bar to clear, but if they weren't clearing it, we'd be really, really worried about that. All right. That was Nick Caserio yesterday. You can get the entire interview up on our podcast page, the Payne and Pendergast podcast page on the Odyssey app. We went about 40 minutes with Nick and some really, really good stuff on there. All right, we got a lot to get to still, man. Let's circle back to some headlines. An update from Nick Caserio on Christian Harris. We've got the Astros winning a game last night. We've got trade deadline rumors going on with the Astros. We've got a prominent name in the NFL reporting to camp, and a whole lot more. We'll get to all of that in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines. Still efforting Seth. Connection issues, technical issues. We'll get it worked out. If we don't, we don't. If we do, we do. But we move onward. Day 7 of Texans training camp. We are live at the Methodist Training Center. I believe we're getting another padded practice today, which is good. That's the best. The sprinklers are on right now. Boy, the sprinklers have been on for a while. That's going to be a wet field. That'll be fun. Play a little slip and slide out there. All right, let's get to Texans training camp. Nick Caserio met with us. He sat down with us yesterday here on Payne and Pendergast. We had a nice long conversation with the Texans executive vice president and general manager. About a 40-minute conversation that you can get on the Odyssey app. Among the things, I went and checked the text page afterwards, so I was glad that I asked about Christian Harris because there were about 15 texts. I went, ask about Christian Harris. Now, Christian Harris, the way I frame this question to Nick on the update about Christian Harris, who, again, is not practiced yet, but he's not on the PUP list, he's not on the non-football injury list, he's on the main roster, but it's been very similar to last year when he, to this point, had not practiced nor even been seen out here. Now, he's at least been out here a couple of times during practice in a hoodie with his teammates, even jogged out here the other day. Everything throughout the spring has been an indication that Christian Harris is going to be ready to go at some point here, but we asked Nick Caserio about it yesterday. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this last Tuesday. There's a number of players that are at different stages in terms of their development relative to their health. I would say specifically in Christian's situation, the way the rules work with NFI, PUP, etc., if they're on one of those lists, there are certain parameters and limitations in terms of what they can participate in. So as a player makes progress, let's say you want to put them into a walkthrough in the evening or something like that, you just have the flexibility to do that. You're sort of keeping him alive. So you just, every case is a little bit different. So we're trying to do what we think is in the best interest of each individual player. So Christian's getting closer. He's starting to make some progress. So really, I would say that was more of a mechanical thing. There wasn't any funny business or anything like that. It's just trying to look at the situation. What do we think makes the most sense? Sometimes can keep a player a little bit more engaged when he's not on one of those lists for a myriad of reasons. So I'd say, again, there is a thought process and a rationale behind it. I'd say that's probably the best explanation for his situation.
Okay, let me, a couple things that I want to be clear on here. One, I have no problem with them being cautious with Christian Harris. Whatever the hell was going on with him last year was weird. I think it was weird to the Texans. We did interviews with Nick at least three times on this show while Christian Harris was rehabbing that injury. Probably interviewed him during training camp about it, then at least twice asked him about it during the season. And my big takeaway from those conversations was that the whatever injury Christian Harris had, there were a ton of curveballs that came with it that they were not expecting. Eventually, he got healthy enough to get on the field, but he wasn't productive enough to stay on the field. Christian Harris is a really talented football player. I want him to be healthy for this season. That's my first takeaway. I got no problem with them being cautious given how last year went. It's a big year for Christian Harris. This is a contract year for him. So I'm sure he wants to be out there practicing and playing and getting the best version of him. I also listen to that answer from Nick and think, like, okay, if they had to play a playoff game on Sunday, I would guess Christian Harris would be active for that game. That's just a guess by me. I'm just guessing by the way the whole thing's been framed that they're not designating him with any of the PUP and NFI stuff so he can do things that maybe aren't on his regimen right now. You know, he can do the walkthroughs if they need him or things like that. He looks like he's moving okay when he's out here. He looks like he's walking just fine. All right, let's shift gears and go to the Astros. The Astros win last night 7-4 over the Washington Nationals. Joe Espada meeting with the media after the game saying, this is a good one. We scored seven runs and we grinded out some at-bats.
Yes, we did. Our bats, we were running scoring position today, were phenomenal. I thought we put some really good at-bats from the beginning. We got their starter out, 74 pitches, and then we went to work with, against their bullpen. I thought we grinded our at-bats. We hit some balls hard. We did some small ball very well. We found ways to score runs.
Yeah, it was good. And for the second straight game, they scored first. Our nightmare is over. They actually won the game this time. Two nights ago, they lost the game, but at least they're scoring first now on teams. They'll go for the series win today against the Nationals at Minute Maid Park. The big story over the next 24 hours isn't going to be whatever the outcome is. Oh, and by the way, the lead in the division is 4 games over the Mariners and 5 games over the Rangers, who are suddenly in the rearview mirror again. I don't like that, mostly because I don't like the Rangers. The big thing over the next 24 to 33 hours, 5 o'clock, Thursday is the trade deadline, 5 o'clock tomorrow. That'll be, I think, an even bigger storyline with the Astros and whatever happens in this afternoon's game between them and the Nationals. Reports yesterday from Ken Rosenthal and Chandler Rome of The Athletic that the Astros may be pursuing Dylan Cease. Chandler did a good job kind of framing it that this feels like it might be a Jim Crane thing. Jim Crane likes star power. He does. He likes two things, and these two things are in direct conflict with each other if they go after Dylan Cease. He likes star power, and he likes not going over the competitive balance tax. If they trade for Dylan Cease, they're going to have to go over the CBT and pay some tax. And that's something that Jim Crane, the behavior of the team throughout this season has been one of a team that has no desire to go over the competitive balance tax and pay a luxury tax. They had to do it last year. This would make them a repeat offender. They traded Ryan Presley so they wouldn't have to do it. They got rid of Rafael Montero, a chunk of his salary, just to to stay copacetic with that threshold. The fact of the matter is, this team, while incredibly undermanned, has done an amazing job of building a four-game lead in their division. And it may end up that the trade deadline reinforcements that they get are guys that are all in Sugarland right now. Like 30% of the Space Cowboys roster last night was Astro guys. Arrigetti, Garcia, J.P. France, Christian Javier, they're all at Sugarland right now. Jeremy Pena, we should mention, got the start for Sugarland last night in a rehab start. Went 0-for-2 with a walk and a hit by pitch. That sums up the Astros season right there. From an injury standpoint, like an injury luck standpoint. I mean, the season's been a good one in the standings. But from a weird injury luck thing, Jeremy Pena, and I didn't watch the game, the Sugarland game, so I don't know where he got hit. Might have gotten hit on his thigh. I don't know. We know that the reason he's been out for 6 weeks is because he got beamed in the ribs. Just that Jeremy Pena gets hit by a pitch on a rehab assignment, and the reason he's on a rehab assignment is that because he got hit by a pitch. I just had to chuckle ironically this morning when I saw that. So, trade deadline coming up. Dylan Cease on the Astros radar, according to Ken Rosenthal and Chandler Rome of The Athletic. Quick NFL news. Trey Hendrickson plans to report to Bengals camp. Trey Hendrickson, who has done as good a job as you can possibly do trying to agitate for a new deal from one of the cheapest, penniest pinching teams in the NFL, who've taken care of some guys, though. I mean, they took care of T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase within the last year. But Trey Hendrickson, the leading sack getter in the NFL last year, they've not yet taken care of him, at least not to the degree that he wants to. They've exchanged offers, but they're not anywhere close. Trey Hendrickson had threatened to sit out the season if he had to get a new deal, which to me is the dumbest thing that you can do because your contract tolls for another year. It's not the contract doesn't expire when you sit out the year. You're still under contract to the Bengals. So if you're just trying to make a point, it's a very expensive point to make. Trey Hendrickson plans to report to Bengals camp, which I think is smart. Dude, just play out your contract for the $16 or $17 million and then get the hell out of there. You knew what you were getting into when you signed with the Bengals. That's why I shed very few tears for these people that complain about their contracts with ratchet front offices and ownership like the Cincinnati Bengals. So go in, play under your crappy contract this year, and get out and go be the biggest free agent on the market. You'll be the biggest fish in the free agency pond next year, and you can go to an actually well-run team. So he's reporting. Henderson's doing the same thing. I remember Andre Johnson did that one time. He wanted a new contract, and he held out for like 2 days, or like maybe a day, maybe an hour. I think he held out for 6 minutes in the parking lot, and then he went in the building. DeAndre Hopkins did that one time too, which I say that with respect. Like that, like Andre's a guy who just couldn't be away from his teammates in the work. DeAndre Hopkins probably more his teammates than the actual practices. He didn't like practice as much as other guys did. Why did I do that? It's a Trey Hendrickson story, and I'm doing a drive-by on DeAndre Hopkins. That was uncalled for. All right, Sean Pendergast with you. Seth Payne, we're efforting right now. Johnny Harris might stop by a little early as well. All right. I love this exercise that ESPN does, especially because the Texans are number one in it. Talent, core talent under the age of 25 on the roster. The Texans were number one last year. Are we the champs again this year? We will have that for you coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you what is today? I'm losing track. Wednesday. It's Wednesday. Payne and Pendergast, but playing the part of Seth Payne is John Harris. For today, we're just having trouble connecting to Seth technically today, so that'll get remedied for tomorrow. But in the meantime, Texans radio, Texan sideline reporter, my first ever radio brother.
Yeah, how about that,
Johnny Harris, joining me out here. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I saw Seth's tweet and I was like, you know, I'm just hanging in studio. I was literally about to watch Reuben Bain Jr. from the University of Miami start, you know, my early scouting that I've been getting done, and I saw Seth's tweet. I was like, you know what? I'm 2 minutes away, man. I can just walk right on out and just, you know, start chopping it up. So, you know, let's go.
Let's go. Yeah.
It's always good when I, you know, sit next to you.
Yep.
You know, done this for a long time. So it's good. Good day. It'll be hot as hell. But day 7 of training camp coming up, so it's going to be good.
Okay. So before we get into, I teased that ESPN article from yesterday that is all good news for the Texans when it comes to their young core. I don't know if you saw that, ranking that. I want to get your thoughts on that, obviously, in a minute. But as long as we've got you here, and obviously you and Mark will be chopping it up from 8 to 10 a.m. today, as you guys always do. I thought yesterday was a good day for the offense.
Absolutely.
Out here.
Totally.
What did you think? What did you like of what you saw yesterday? What were the key things offensively? Because it's been, by and large, a defensive camp so far, but I thought yesterday might have been the best day the offense has had.
Well, I felt really good about what the offense is doing yesterday, and then it was confirmed after practice because I saw a few of the defensive personalities, players, coaches, staff, and they seemed to be a little bit disgruntled about things. So
good.
I was like, okay,
yeah,
all right, good. All right. I feel good.
Yeah. You've had your moments.
Yeah, so I felt good about that. You know, it was interesting. I thought, you know, 7-on-7 was kind of the first group drill that they did, and I think it was the second or maybe the first throw. Caleb Locke came up with another interception. And you're like, God dang.
Yeah.
This dude is just all over the place. And it was like the next play was just a CJ throw to Kirk, I think just out in the flat. But from that point on, it felt like that kind of broke the seal and the offense really kind of got it going. There was a great play by Sting and Petrie over here on Higgins that knocked the ball away. But after that, the receivers that made plays, you know, Kirk had a deep over route, you know, beating the nickel across the field, which is great. And it just had flashbacks to 23 when Kirk was doing that to Tavier Thomas in the building. And that big game against Jacksonville. And it was like, I keep seeing Tavier Thomas on Christian Kirk, and I know that ain't good. And so seeing Kirk do that, what he did to us in 23, was just awesome. But Xavier Hutchinson had a one-hand catch on the sideline, which was awesome. You had Jaden Higgins, who came back later in practice and mossed somebody. I don't know who. He went up over somebody on our sideline.
It was right in front of us.
Yeah,
he got his feet down, and he kept the ball to the ground. It was great.
It was unbelievable. Those guys made catches. I feel like all the quarterbacks threw the ball exceptionally well. Now, Keaton didn't have as many chances, but my guest after practice today is going to be Graham Mertz. I'm really excited to talk to Graham because he's been throwing it really well.
He has.
I mean, really, really well. He's been very accurate. He's thrown the right ball. I had a buddy of mine. We were talking about this last year, and he's like, you know, three types of balls. One ball, which is a laser. The three ball is kind of the deep ball, the big parabola. And the two ball, which is the hardest one to be accurate with and be good with, which I think CJ's great with, the two ball. Graham's been throwing that two ball well. He's been throwing the ball in a cover two hole really well. Justin Watson, I thought, had a really good day. But I feel like Davis Mills is throwing the ball, and I told him this in the hallway. I said, I've been here 5 years, and I don't know if I've seen you throw it better.
This is the best he's looked since he's been here.
And what's interesting, Sean, because in OTAs and minicamp, Mark and I looked at each other a few times. We're like, what's wrong with Davis? Like, what's going on with him, man? He should be throwing it better. He came out here for training camp, and it was like from first throw through yesterday, he has been diamond people. I mean, all kinds of throws, touch throws. He had a touch throw over the weekend to Brevin. When the offense couldn't really do anything, he hit that touch throw to Brevin. He's made a couple of nice throws. But then Seven had a couple of throws yesterday that were like, okay, those are the ones we remember. The best one, I thought, he had Dalton Schultz kind of down the seam. And Dalton does a really good job of understanding body position. I know Dalton takes, you know, crap for, you know, he's not the fastest guy. He's not the greatest blocker. But he's extremely smart, especially in a pass game. And he did a great job of kind of widening Sting with his route, and he kind of broke it back in just slightly. And there was a spot about the size of a big purse, maybe,
okay,
that CJ could throw it into from 25 yards away. And he couldn't have walked over and handed the ball to Dalton in any better spot. Because left or right, 6 inches either way, either Kalen makes the knockdown, Sting gets the knockdown, but he stuck it right in between them where neither one of them could get their hands on it. Dalton had to catch it. I was like, That's Seven. Like, that's what we've been seeing. But I think probably the biggest and positive thing is the fact that I thought the pass protection really improved. And Mark likes to say this term, aggressive counseling. You know, Cole Popovich has done some aggressive counseling with that group after some periods.
Yeah, he's fun to watch.
Yeah. he doesn't hold back. And I love him. He is a true, you know, he played offensive line at Fresno State. I know if you go in the Wayback Machine, one of the great games of college history is 2005 against USC when Reggie Bush had like 515 yards or whatever it was.
Yeah.
A total offense that night. Cole was an offensive lineman at Fresno State team, And a lot of people don't remember is in that game, Fresno State takes the lead.
Yeah.
After Reggie fumbled the ball. And then on the next drive, Reggie has the famous, you know, put the ball behind his back, basically the guy fly by and then running for a touchdown.
Yep.
That changed everything. But Cole was an offensive lineman on Fresno State's team at that time. And so he's got a lot of experience in this thing. He knows. He just has, I think, the right demeanor. But he's a really good teacher. You watch him after every play. There's somebody he's talking to on every play.
Yeah.
And I think that can be good. But I think he also has the offensive lineman's mentality, which is you got to know when to leave the guys alone. You know, you blow a block. Like, sometimes this is best. Leave the guy. Let it marinate a little bit. Don't mention it. Go to the other guys.
Yeah.
Come back to it later. But I think the offensive line has protected much better. The backs and tight ends have done a better job of protecting. Even Dalton, was on Monday.
Well,
he was against Daryl Taylor, who's been fantastic.
Yeah.
And he went one-on-one against Taylor and kept him out of there and let CJ make a throw. So I feel like that's improved now.
It's been better. It's definitely been better than it was this time last year.
Sure.
This time last year, CJ was dog cussing people. Remember that?
Couldn't get it off.
Remember that? And that was when they went in with, this is our offensive line. Like, they had guys in ink.
That's right.
And this has been, it looks like it's starting to, the combinations are starting to come together a little bit, but it's still a very competitive situation for sure.
What's interesting, Sean, I think, you know, I've heard Seth say this a few times, and he's right in that the starting offensive line was set in stone, like, day one last year.
Yeah.
The problem with that ultimately is the fact that it had to be set in stone because there wasn't enough talent on the second group to really push them for spots.
Yep.
So it was like, it was set in stone, and those guys knew it because the guys behind them weren't going to really push for opportunities. So you were kind of stuck with what you had.
Just cut to the chase.
Yeah. You're just like, all right, let's go with it. But I think one of the things, I love Laramie. I love Laramie as a dude. I didn't love his approach. And Laramie's approach was, well, I'll get ready when I'm ready.
Dude, I was thinking of this yesterday when there was the video that surfaced of all the offensive linemen doing push-ups after practice.
Yeah.
Well, would Laramie have been here for push-ups? Or he'd have been way over there probably.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, how could you find cohesion? Because Laramie was going to get ready when Laramie got ready. And my point in that is, well, Laramie didn't show up till like week three of the preseason.
Yeah.
And look, it got Blake some good reps last year left and right, but you got no cohesion through the toughest part of practice, which was the pads. Once you get to the third week of the training camp, you didn't have pads on all that much.
Yeah.
So you weren't working things or seeing game speed like you wanted to. You knew Laramie was going to be able to handle it, but he had to work with the guys next to him. And that was gone for 3 weeks.
Well,
you're not having that now.
And I don't think that Laramie's approach is in one vacuum, and him getting all those false starts, especially early in the year, is in a separate vacuum.
Yeah,
those things are intertwined with one another.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's, you know, the false start. We were at the combine, and I was with Paul Allen and the Vikings team. We were doing a podcast.
He's their play-by-play guy.
And so before we got started, they were asking me, hey, what was your experience with Stephon Diggs? And so I said, you know, it was good. I was like, we felt like we really needed Steph last year. Like, he was really, and you talk to people around the building, they'll tell you the same thing. I was like, you know what? We really needed him. He gave us, you know, the offensive kick in the ass. And so I told him a story about being in Minnesota about how at halftime at Minnesota, it's a long walk. And then once you even get on the other side of the, you know, the doorway, you got a long walk down the corridor to the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd finished up my D'Amico interview, and I can hear a voice just giving it to somebody. I'm like, what? And so I kind of stopped, and I was like, all right, I'll kind of be a fly on the wall for this. And I turn around, and Diggs is laying into Laramie. Like, laying into him.
Well, that was a game where he had the three false starts.
Well, it was funny because I had forgotten about that.
Yeah.
And Pete Bursich.
Yeah, yeah.
Your buddy, that's who I was talking to. Yeah, that's who I was talking to. I was like, Pete. And I told him the story, and he goes, let me guess. Laramie Tunsil, all the false starts. I was like, how do you know? Oh, yeah, all the false starts. Yeah, that was the game he had. So, yeah. And it's, you know, it's week three. You're on the road in a tough environment. and you have no cohesion. And look, I'm not sitting here going to tell you that the offensive line is going to be, you know, the Dallas Cowboys unit of the 90s and that kind of thing. But there is improvement in the overall unit and the cohesiveness of the unit. And I think that's, to me, what has to happen.
Yeah, well, there's way more of a five fingers in the glove thing going on. It feels like, you know, that with this, there will be with this group when whenever they set and determine who the five are going to be.
Yep.
All right, so ESPN.com, Johnny Harris is out with me here today, live at Texans training camp. And then we'll pass the baton at 8 a.m. to him and Mark Vandermeer. So ESPN does this. I feel like you enjoy this exercise that ESPN does because it does correlate to the draft in some ways and how well you've – you're the preeminent draft guru that I know. You're my go-to. FootballTakeover.com, by the way.
Thank you.
But the Texans for the second straight year finished first in this exercise where they have the best, according to ESPN, the best young core – in football of guys under the age of 25 as of September 1st of this year. That's the cutoff date.
Right.
Under 25 right now. And it's sort of a combination of subjective and some empirical stuff here. I mean, it's a lot. The criteria, I mean, there's 8 bullet points of this criteria.
Yeah.
Just know that the big ones are age, quality of play. It feels like they weight things. If you've got a quarterback that's under the age of 25, that really, really helps.
Yep.
But the bottom line is this. For the second straight year, the Texans are number one in this exercise. And, look, it is being largely fueled by C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson Jr., which is awesome because I feel like when the Texans drafted C.J. and traded up to get Will, I don't think they sat down and said, man, we're going to be number one in the ESPN under 25 rankings. But I do feel like that this is a byproduct of what they were planning, you know, what the plan was that day. They group them into blue chip players, and the blue chip players that they have for the Texans are C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson, who, by the way, are both 23.
Yeah.
Texans are probably going to be number one on this list again next year.
Right.
Derek Stingley Jr. will age off of the list this year, but he's there. He's 24 years old. Kamari Lassiter is 22. Those are the four guys they have as the blue-chip players. But, man, they go on to – you know, Kalen Bullock is a guy who got a ton of love in that other exercise ESPN did with all the anonymous GMs and coaches and scouts. Henry Toa has been real solid, 24 years old. By the way, Kalen is 22. And then the rookie class they mention, and these guys have all done well so far early in camp. Ariante Ursary is 23. The two wide receivers from Iowa State, Higgins and Knoll, are 22. Jalen Smith has had a bunch of pass breakups out here.
Yeah, J-Rock's been good, man.
He's been good out
really
here.
Good.
He's 21 years old. So this, honestly, Johnny, and this is me getting greedy, like imagine if they hit on just one of the offensive linemen that they've taken over the last, like if they Kenyon's 24 still, and Blake Fisher I think is 22. Juice aged off of this list, but if they, my God, I mean this is it's incredible to begin with, but holy crap that there was still some meat on the bone that could have gotten them, you know, even more separation. This is a testament, I think, to the plan of attack they had on day one of 2023. And obviously Stingley factors into that as well the year before. But now that they've sort of kind of, I don't want to say mastered because we've still got a lot of runway with these young players, but early on here it looks like the approach of getting out of the first round and sort of accumulating stuff in day two to supplement these elite guys that you have, you know, it's early, but, you know, so far so good.
It's interesting when you think back to that 23 draft. I mean, you and I talked about this a lot. I felt like that 23 draft was a four elite player draft.
Mm-hmm.
It was the two quarterbacks, Bryce and CJ. It was Jalen Carter, who obviously with some of the off-field incidents, I didn't think he was going to be in the crosshairs. And then it was Will Anderson Jr. And I would sit down. I sat down that entire spring, and I was like, how do we get two of them? Because we got the assets, man. We got assets to go get two of them. And I remember when the trade happened, and I would be asked by national people or asked by, you know, people from other municipalities. And he gave up a lot. I'm like, look, we didn't – at that time, we didn't have elite players. Like, whose jersey did you go buy? You know, you're buying Stings on spec.
Yeah.
Because it's a cool number, 24, which I love. And you hope that Sting was going to be good. But even at that point, Sting missed the last half of that year. So, whose jersey were you going to buy? I.e., where were your elite players? Nico hadn't become Nico yet. And so, yeah, okay, you drafted Stroud. Great. It's going to be a lot of seven jerseys, you know, built. But you still needed elite players. but you also needed an elite alpha. And that's why I felt like the trade for Will Anderson was more than just trading for defensive end Will Anderson. You were trading for the whole package. And I thought because of that, it made a lot of sense. You get an elite player that is going to be an elite locker room guy eventually. He is going to be the face of your franchise, especially on the defensive side. And he's going to set a tone that if what I saw at Alabama, what I heard about him at Alabama, that if that carried forward, which there was no reason why it wouldn't.
Right.
Okay, you were adding elite players to the mix. What Nick has mastered since is, well, we're going to use our first-round pick. We're going to move down with Minnesota, but then use that pick to go get Diggs. Now, Diggs' injury kind of curtailed.
I would do it again. I'd do it again.
Right, because in the second round, you go get Kamari Lassiter.
Correct.
And this year in the second round, you get Jaden Higgins. And because you trade down from 25 to 34, you get Higgins and more capital. You get Higgins and the opportunity to trade up to get Woody Marks, who, by the way, I think Woody is going to be – I mean, you know how I felt. I reacted with on the show.
I was five feet away from you.
I'm,
you went nuts.
But I'm watching him here, and I'm seeing what he's doing, and I'm like, this is the guy. And I know there's a lot of conjecture about Joe Mixon, and I was on the way up here, I was getting caught up on Reggie and John from yesterday. They were talking about that. I think he had a camp question that I thought was interesting. Well, hey, if Joe can't go, like he goes on early season IR, you know, is Nick is prime Nick Chubb enough to keep Joe as kind of the 1B or what? And I thought it was a really good question, but they didn't really mention the other two guys who I think have been as good as you could possibly be.
For sure.
In Juwan Jordan and Woody Marks.
Yep.
So because Nick maneuvered the board the way that he did and you know, when you're drafting down at this part of the board, which hopefully we're going to do that for a long time.
A long time, yes.
Those trades into the second round only piss off the people that had set the draft party. My girl Disney Harris, man, she's probably like, God dang, Nick, I set this draft party up and then you trade out of it. You know, Larry and Stafford screaming, we didn't draft anybody at the draft. You know, and I'm like, look, man, we're going to get a good player tomorrow. And guess who it turns out to be? Jaden freaking Higgins.
Yeah.
And draft capital that you can then move down and go move back up at some point and get Woody Marks or whoever they drafted. They trade up to get Ursary. So that to me is where the genius is now. Like, you bet Nick better, and he knows this, Nick better get Stroud and Will Anderson right. He better get them right.
Yeah.
When you get into the second round, it's a little dicier.
It's dicier, for sure.
But do you look at Kamari Lassiter and you go, yeah, he's that one.
Well, and I think they've gotten really good, especially once D'Amico got in the building, of evaluating their type of guys, too.
That's exactly right. And they said it to me at the combine. I thought it was interesting. D'Amico said that. He said once the season was over and he started jumping into draft prep, he said when he would pick up the initial reports from the scouts, it started saying, not a D'Amico guy, not a Swarm guy, totally our guy. Guy D'Amico would love. Like, those things ended up in the scouting reports, which I thought was fabulous, because now, as Sheldon said 2 days ago, now the culture is set.
The machine is working now.
Now everybody knows what D'Amico and Nick look for.
Yep.
The players know the standard of what's expected of them.
Yep.
And I'm talking all levels. Like, special teams, I know people, when it gets to special teams, you know, everybody gets on their phone, the media gets on their phone. Why don't you pay attention an hour and 45 minutes into practice, and I want you to watch Frank Ross's dudes that have just gone through O&D, and they're flying down the field in 95-degree heat like it's the last rep they'll ever have in their life.
Yeah.
You're like, that's the standard that they have set. Now, the standard has to be winning that divisional playoff round.
Sure, yeah, of course.
But they're at least piling on the pieces to be able to do that. So them being number one, it's not really, you know, not too surprising. Like you said, they listed the blue chippers. They didn't put Kalen there.
No.
You know, Henry was the leading tackler last year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, a guy who I'd like to see on that list, and if he's healthy, he could be on that list, is C. Harris, 48. I mean, he could definitely be on that list, but he's got to be healthy to be on it. And I think one of – Kate Stover, Jalen Smith, Woody Marks, kind of a third or fourth rounder of the last couple years, is going to be a guy that kind of bursts out this year. I mean, you know, Cade's been my breakout guy, but watching Jalen Smith this year and watching Woody Marks, the two USC guys, man, they've been really impressive thus far.
I think the other interesting thing, the other interesting thing about this exercise that ESPN did, and John Harris is in for Seth, and we're talking about this ESPN ranking of the under 25 years old cores of all 32 NFL teams. The interesting thing about this is, might the AFC South be on the cusp of a bit of a renaissance here? Because Texans are first, eighth on the list, the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
And we'll see what the magnificent Gladstone ends up doing to either hurt or help that. Mm-hmm. Number nine is the Tennessee Titans. And obviously, they drafted a quarterback with the number one overall pick. That helps.
Yeah.
I'm assuming. I'm not reading their paragraphs in this article right now. Indianapolis is 20th, which is, you know, that can go either way. You know, them missing on Anthony Richardson, or at least looking like they've missed on Anthony Richardson, certainly hurts them. But if I did the exercise where you add up the rankings of all the teams by division, you know, so the higher the number, the worse the under 25 cores are. And the AFC South and the NFC East are tied in a runaway right now with 38 total points. They have the least amount of points, which is means you're the best in this exercise. Right. How are you feeling about the division right now? Just in terms, is that rating of the young cores of the other teams in the division? Do you think that's indicative of the direction this division is going, or do you feel like this is still – because there's a big gap, in my opinion, right now between the Texans and these other three teams.
It is, and I think it's all dependent on two players, and that's Trevor Lawrence and Anthony Richardson. I think Cam's going to be good. Tennessee, they just got to – they got to let him cook a little bit. You know, he's the type of quarterback where you got to let him cook. You can't put the reins on him all the time. Like, he's a creator, and he's going to make a mistake when he creates every now and again. But he's also going to make four or five plays that other quarterbacks in this league can't make. And I think he's going to give them kind of a lift in Tennessee. So I anticipate him, and not just because he's number one overall pick. I just, the way he plays, the confidence he has, I think he's going to be the right fit in Tennessee. But really it comes down to Trevor Lawrence and Anthony Richardson. Because like you mentioned, Jacksonville, you know, if Travis Hunter is all that on both sides of the ball, Tyson Campbell apparently has been having a really good camp thus far. BTJ has been unbelievable. I don't mind them having good receivers because I feel like our corners can match up. It was like when teams had, you know, good pass rushers, it didn't matter because we had Laramie. Now a little different. We'll see how he handle it. But now when we face teams that have got really good receivers, like, all right, well, Sting's got number one.
No kidding.
And Kamari's got the other guy, so we're okay. So, yeah, I think this is where it's going. You know, the Colts, you know, drafted all these good receivers, young receivers. You know, Adonai Mitchell, Josh Downs.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, Josh Downs' brother is Caleb Downs, is at Ohio State.
Oh, yeah, the safety,
Holy
right?
Holy crap.
Yeah.
If you eventually, you know, I don't know where this goes with the Texans, and I don't know, you know, what the extension might be if they give one to C.J. Gardner-Johnson, sticks around. But, man, if Caleb Downs came here and played next to Kalen Ballock, there wouldn't be an interception or a turnover they couldn't get. Man. But either way, the Colts have a great, great wide receiving core. Now you had Tyler Warren to it. But you got scattershot Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
It was interesting reading some of the Indianapolis stuff. Like, oh, Anthony Richardson, the last couple of days, man, he started to, there's a lot of hope. And there's a lot of, look what he can do.
Have we heard that before out of there?
Absolutely.
Okay, gotcha. I just double-checking to make sure.
Now, Trevor's the one. Trevor should be a lot better than he is. And, you know, look, can you blame it on Urban Meyer the first year? Sure. Doug the last couple of years? I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I mean, the game against us here in week four last year, he had four, maybe five opportunities to put knives right in us.
Yeah.
Just take us down.
Yep.
And he blew it.
Couldn't do it.
He just absolutely could not hit open receivers. Now, some of that was a pass rush. I'll give that. But we did not cover well that game, and he had all kinds of – and he missed, just flat out missed them. And then he's banged up. And then, of course, you know, what happened in Jacksonville happened in Jacksonville. But he's that guy for them. If Leon Cohen can kind of Baker Mayfield him, then okay, oh boy. Now it gets really interesting. Because that level of talent at Jacksonville, you know, Trent Baalke took a lot of crap, and deservedly so. But he put together some really good pieces.
Yeah.
But those pieces never got cohesive more than that one run at the end of 22.
Well, the pieces are what get them to eighth on this
right.
list. It's nothing Gladstone's
right.
done. I mean, it's the pieces that Baalke took.
Yeah.
And it's that's the, this exercise isn't about the chemistry of all the things. It's about just the sum total of the value of
right.
the parts.
And,
you know?
And therein lies why I'd be excited as an AFC South fan and the Texans being the AFC South. But I think the difference with where the Texans are and the others are – they're pieces that have come together
yeah.
and done things. and the others are just athletic pieces that you don't really know. How did Travis Hunter and Brian Thomas Jr. work together? How does that work?
Yep.
You know, is Travis Hunter all that? Is he able to play both ways like he thinks he can?
I want to ask you about Travis Hunter because you watched every snap of him, I'm sure, at Colorado, and he's they're really giving it a go of him playing both ways. I've seen some tweets with the snap counts out of practice, and it's funny. On 11-on-11, it's skewed more towards defense, or at least as of 2 days ago it was. I don't know if that's balanced itself out or anything. He's clearly doing stuff on both sides of the ball at camp, and neither is a novelty. Like, he is working on both sides. If you had to guess, how long does that last, and what side of the ball? If he winds up on one side of the ball way more than the other, which side do you think it is, and which side would it be if you were Liam Cohen?
I would lean defensively, because I always feel like you can find – I mean, there's so many receivers you can find.
Yep.
But I don't know that you can find a corner that's got his smarts, his ball skills. There are very few. I mean, we've got the best one in the league right here, so you see the best. But Sting's built different. Like, he's built different.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's thick. So he's good.
He's, like, literally built. Not one of these the psychology built different.
Right.
He's just, like, a different – he's out of a different lab than other guys.
So if you're game planning – if you're game planning against the Jaguars, one of the things, I've heard coaches mention this phrase. They're like, hey, have the littles come up and make plays. And the littles meaning the DBs. I'd run at that sucker all day. I'd force him to have to come up and run support all day.
That's messed up,
because
by the way.
It's not me. I just repeated what
I know.
I
know. Yeah.
Like, make the littles make plays. And so make Travis Hunter come up and tackle 10 times in the first half.
Right.
Run at him. Run outside zone. You'll put a lead blocker on. Make him feel the game. Make him feel the presence, such that, A, we can't put him in an offense this series. He's gassed. He's made 3 tackles on his drive.
Yeah.
He can't go in an offense. So that, to me, is what you really have to get to with him.
Yeah.
Because when he talked about the whole Otani thing, it's like, come on, man. You know, Otani's got to do it both ways. But the one thing he missed and didn't say is playing both sides is going to end up being physical. So is he going to go out receiver and not block?
Yeah. No. The Otani thing is only a comparison because they both go both ways in their respective sport.
Right.
There's not nearly the – there's no physical toll for Otani.
Right. Exactly. So he's going to – so there's 65 –
not no physical toll, but like no blunt force trauma.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's – there are no collisions. So, there's 65 plays on each side. It's 130 plays.
Yeah.
So you run the ball. I mean, I would run wherever he was all the time.
Yep.
I mean, I would run at him. I would hit him with wide receiver 1 and 2 in the blocking. I mean, I would just run right at him all game long. Like, come on and tackle. Because he's pretty in tune and he's not scared.
Yeah.
He's not going to back off physically. But that might ultimately be what takes him down. Because you think of the great players in this league that play one side of the ball, invariably they miss 2-3 games when they're playing at that level. And plus, when he goes and catches a ball, he's not going to be able to run away from a Big 12 defense. He's going to catch a ball and get blasted by Petrie. He's going to end up catching a ball, and take a shot from Kenny Moore from the Colts.
Yep.
He's going to take those hits, and they're going to accumulate. So that's why I think being smart with him early is going to be kind of the wise way to go. Like, all right, they're going to have to kind of pick stretches of when they can, all right, this might be a 100-play game. This might only be an 80-play game. They're going to probably have to pick and choose. I love them giving it a shot. I really do. Just as a football fan, I love it. I love a unique player like that. I love guys that can go both ways. I would love to see Sting try it because he's got great hands, but it's unique for a reason.
Yeah. The first 5 games of this season are so interesting.
So interesting.
You know, the opener with the Rams, a real test for this offensive line. The Monday night opener, which a primetime opener, home opener for the second year in a row against Tampa, is, that might have been the most exciting game of the D'Amico Ryans era so far, was that game 2 years ago in week 9. And then the 2 division games against the 2 opponents that actually have something new and interesting going on with Travis Hunter in week 3. And then Cam Ward in week 4, and then obviously you go try to take down the beast in week 5 going into the bye week.
You look at it, and I know a lot of fans will say, and you look at it and think, well, if we beat the Rams and Bucks, man, we'd be 4-0. Well, hell, Tennessee beat you here last year because you didn't take care of your business, and you just were sloppy and tired. and exhausted, basically. That was 12 of 13 in a row. So it's not surprising, but, man, going out to L.A. and beating them, you know, we have played
those
so
are two
far.
Playoff teams you're starting.
Exactly.
With.
Yeah, and, I mean, really, really good quarterbacks you've got to face. Davante Adams with the Rams. I think the Bucs are one of the more underrated teams in the league.
Yep.
But I think if the offense can get it going, I think they can run the ball, at least against the Rams. And I think, and I said this after we practiced against the Rams, I said, man, teams are going to put a number on them up on the board if they can get the ball off.
Right.
The Vikings in the playoff game could get the ball off, and they end up scoring 9 points. If you get the ball off against the Rams, you got an opportunity to put up a big number. Now, running against Big Vita Vea in week 2 is going to be a challenge. But if they can just get some semblance of a running game by then play action is a monster. And I don't think the Bucs cover guys can stay with a healthy group of Texas receivers. I just don't think it happened. But to win both those games, look, you know it. You had a 2-win parlay on those first two. I mean, that's a pretty decent number to beat those two to start the year.
They're about a field goal. I've seen 3.5 underdog to the Rams.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That Bucs game is hovered around a pick'em.
Exactly.
The Bucs are viewed a pick'em at NRG Stadium, which means that on some people's power rankings, the Bucs are viewed as a superior team
right now. Yeah.
You know, so those are two tough ones right out of the
shoot.
You've got two quarterbacks that can, you know, that you might end up getting into a shootout with.
And I know every team is different, and I know it's been a couple years, but thankfully DeMeco has faced Matt Stafford before. He's faced the McVay offense before. That helps.
Yeah.
And the Bucs are Liam Cohen-less. So they've got a new offensive coordinator that they're integrating. Now, the Bucs are facing, obviously, a new offensive coordinator here. But those two right out of the chute, it's going to be really interesting. Now, Stafford's dealing with some back stuff. I kind of hope he continues to.
I would rest till week 2 if I were him.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be my advice.
Jimmy G. Come on, bring Jimmy G.
Oh, that's right. That's who.
Let's get Jimmy Garoppolo.
Can I tell you, I didn't realize Trey Lance is on the Chargers.
Yesterday.
I got to get back up to speed on my backup quarterback.
That happens tomorrow night.
Yeah, Hall of Fame
game,
baby.
We got football tomorrow night.
Man, I know.
It's amazing to think about. That was us last year, and I remember being up there. And one of our great moments, Aaron Raybould, our engineer, and Robert Hensley, who produces On the Road, three of us, went over early that Thursday. We had never been to the Hall of Fame, so we go through the Hall of Fame. We go in the bust room, and I got pictures of all the Packers I was sending my dad.
I mean,
blast. And then we get to the end, and there's the guys going in. And the way they had set it up, it was perfect symmetry.
So they had the busts of the guys that were
going in? They didn't have them. They had the little
platforms. The space for the platform.
Yeah.
I got you.
So right in the middle is Andres.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, this is cool. I'm telling you, we don't walk out the door and Andre's walking in, and it was like, this is so cool, man. We just saw where your bus is going. I've never seen the real thing.
That's so cool.
It was, I mean, other than the rain at the end, it was such a great weekend.
Yeah.
But it was so early, man. That team last year did not need to start early.
No, dude.
It was a long marathon.
I was with CJ doing an event the day that the Hall of Fame game got announced, like in late March.
Yeah.
And we were doing an event. We were in the green room together. It was like a fireside chat kind of thing. We were in the green room together. And I'm like, how you doing, man? He's like, I'm doing all right, but I just found out my summer vacation got short by a week.
Yeah, exactly.
He was saying it.
He wasn't alone, man.
Yeah, no,
he wasn't alone. It was all of us like,
no.
It's July 16th. We got to go to practice?
It was.
What?
It was funny. I mean, it just got announced like 45 minutes before that. It was really funny.
Yeah.
To CJ's credit, he put a happy face on during the event that we did.
Here's the question. Would you rather have gone to the Hall of Fame game? Well, now that I look back on it, maybe I know the answer to this. Would you rather have gone to the Hall of Fame game or play the Vikings in Tottenham? I think I may have rather in Tottenham. I don't know. Kind of looking at it that way, like, hey, you know, we'll go to the Hall of Fame game, but you take us out of London. Because we were told by the Vikings people at the Combine that year, oh, we'll see you in London.
That's what I had heard,
And then
something happened.
Nope.
Something happened.
And then we got the Hall of Fame game. I don't know. It's crazy how that works.
Hey, okay, two things for the final segment here. One, you had Andre on Texans All Access week. Okay, yeah. So I want to play a funny clip from Andre, long as we're talking about him.
Okay.
I have an either-or that I feel like is right up your alley.
Okay. All right.
And it's about the first five games of the Texans season.
Oh, okay.
Either-or for John Harris. Right. This is a game we used to play all the time, you and me.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to do that in the final segment coming up next, and then we'll hand it over to Johnny and Mark at the top of the hour. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast live from Texans training camp. Payne and Pendergast, John Harris in for Seth Payne. Seth back in tomorrow. We're live at Texans training camp. It is day 7. The pads go on again today, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so. I mean, it's a day before a day off.
Yeah.
But I've seen D'Amico at times, and this is where the sports science and the nutrition, all that comes in. Every single rep, every single player is measured for their output during practice.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have been surprised if last Friday was part of the bouillabaisse of why they had the walkthrough practice.
Yeah.
They look at all that, they study all that, and they're like, man, these first 2 days, it was really hot.
Well, they went 4 in a row also.
Right.
You know, Wednesday through Saturday.
Right.
You know?
So I think that might have been it. But man, they monitor every rep, how much they're burning off, how much weight they're losing, how many, you know, MPH they're going, all that.
Oh, it's the really, science is amazing.
The sports science is incredible.
All right, I want to make sure we get this in because we're out in a few minutes here. This is Andre Johnson. This was hilarious, I thought. This was Andre Johnson on with you guys, Johnny, on Texans All Access with you and Mark. You guys sat down with Dre and asked, what do you most miss? What do you most not miss about training camp?
To be honest, there's nothing I miss about
any of it. I just want to hear you say it.
I don't miss nothing about any of it. You know, I have people, like, I was out here the other day at practice, and people was like, man, you don't miss playing. I don't miss any of it at all.
Yeah.
Actually, when I'm out here looking at it, I'm always like, how was I able to do this for 14 years?
Yeah.
So, to be honest, it makes you ask more questions than anything. So, I just enjoy coming out, though, to watching it. I love watching practice and just watching the games and things of that nature. So, yeah, I'm a huge fan of football. So, yeah.
That is a man who is at peace with his retirement right
Absolutely.
There. I like hearing that. You know, it's a big adjustment for guys. And Andre's been retired for a little while now. But that is a man who is, if anything, he's questioning his decisions in his younger years doing this for as long as he did.
What I thought was funny about Trey, there was one year, and I can't remember if it was the offseason or it was training camp, and he was kind of angling for a new contract, and he missed the first day, and everybody's like, whoa.
I talked about this very thing earlier in the show.
Yeah,
today.
Nothing happened, and he was back the next day.
Yeah.
Like, they're just guys that understood, and Dre being one of them, he understood his impact on the team. He understood his impact on the guys in the locker room. But he loved ball. And to play it at that point, you know, when he started in 03, when he got here, man, there was 2 days, there were meetings in between. Those are some long-ass training camp practices in days.
Yeah.
This, you obviously have an hour 45 to 2 hour practice.
Yeah.
And then it's a mental grind the rest of the day,
mm-hmm.
because it's a meeting, it's maybe an hour and a half walkthrough.
Yeah.
Sometimes
you're at work.
Sometimes I wanted to be at practice more than I wanted to be at a walkthrough. But that was a training camp grind.
Yep.
I think the NFL's gotten it right with the CBA, and it's filtered down to college and eventually high school. You know, we don't have 2 days anymore, and that's good.
We don't have to kill these guys.
But him saying that, you talk to football players after the fact, and you're like, what did you love about playing a game? Sundays. What did you hate about playing a game? Training camp.
Yep.
Like, almost 100%. Now, there are some psychos that enjoy training camp.
Especially here, like it's 90 jillion degrees.
If we did training camp up at the Greenbrier 24/7, 365 for the training camp up there, like, all right, you might, like, it's okay. There's just such a difference. Like, when a guy walks over to you after practice here, and he's just glistening with sweat.
Oh,
and you're like,
soaked.
He wants to go into an ice bath. He wants to go get breakfast. You get the Greenbrier. It's like, yeah, man, I could go another hour.
Yeah.
So that definitely does play a role. But
and we'll be there next week.
That's right.
We'll be there next week at the Greenbrier.
Awesome.
It's going to be a whole lot of fun. I want to get this either or in with you.
Okay, yeah, let's do
it. All right, you and I talked about the first 5 weeks of the season. Texans have kind of an early bye week this year, week 6.
Right, week 6.
Would you rather have the Texans going into the bye week 4-1 with the one loss being the typical convincing loss to the Ravens, or 3-2, but a convincing win over the Ravens in week 5 going into the bye week. 4-1 would mean that you were 4-0 to start the season, mm-hmm. and you're feeling good. You're probably one of the big stories in the NFL.
Right.
And then that Monday after that Ravens game would be same old Texans. That would be the theme. Right?
I know this answer 100%.
3-2 would mean you probably lost the game in the division already, in all likelihood.
Probably.
You know, like the other four games are L.A., the L.A. Rams, mm-hmm. Tampa Bay, and then the two division games against Jacksonville and Tennessee. So that means you've definitely lost either a division game or that home opener against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because you will have lost two of those four games.
You could have lost the first two. Then win 3 in a row, which would be the ultimate. I'll take 3-2 and win over the Ravens because nothing will make a statement for this team
yep.
more across the national landscape than beating Baltimore in Baltimore.
Yep.
Beating Lamar Jackson for the first time, beating the Ravens for the first time in Baltimore, and really kind of putting a stake in the ground that you're not going to shove us around anymore. And this team understands, okay, we know how to handle this team now.
Yeah.
You think about every start against Lamar Jackson, 19, 20, 23 twice last year. He has dominated.
Never a good one.
Every
yeah.
game. Now, it wasn't until the second half of the playoff game, but he eventually took over the game.
Yep.
If you go and beat them, that's the story going in. And I think also for D'Amico, he now looks at his guys and he's like, you just beat arguably the most talented team in the league, and you thumped them in their own building.
Yeah.
What is it that you cannot do now? And there's nothing at that point. There's nothing that you cannot
do. Well, the one thing you can't do, and I know what you mean by can't do, like capable of doing.
Capable.
One thing you can't do is take that bye week in those 2 weeks to listen to all your press clippings.
And then go to Seattle
Monday night is your first game.
And that's
coming
as
out
tough
of that.
A place as you're
late.
Gonna,
it's mean. A you know, it's a body clock late start. It's like 9 o'clock.
Remember the last time we were in Seattle? Do you remember that day? It could have yeah. arguably been the greatest sporting event day in the city of Houston.
It was during the World Series.
Because it was game 5
yeah.
of the World Series,
yep.
arguably the greatest World Series game ever, and you just couldn't hang on.
Damn. I'm with you, man. I'll take 3-2 with a win over the Ravens.
Yes, 3-2 and win over the Ravens.
It's a long season. We can get that win back. You know,
that's right. We got more division games after
yeah.
that. That's fine. I don't want you to lose the Titans here.
No.
Could I see Gladstone and the Jags knocking us off?
But in Jacksonville in mm-hmm. week 3? Yeah, like somewhere, that 3-2 record means somewhere along the way in those four games, there's going to be some tribulations
right.
where we're feeling negative on the radio mm-hmm. about the team.
That's right.
All right, Johnny, thank you, my friend.
Appreciate it,
brother. Have a good show.
Fun.
All right. Love you, Johnny. Appreciate you. All right. That's it. We're done. We're out of time. Seth will be back tomorrow. Texans Training Camp Live is coming up next. John Harris and Mark Vandermeer, they've got you for the next couple hours. In the Loop, we'll be out here doing their thing from 10 to 2. Appreciate y'all listening. Have a great day, everybody.